Connecticut Democrats, or Connecticrats, as they have never been called.
Welcome to this week's episode of Connecticrats. I'm Tara Kamen.
And I'm David Kostek. We're well into October, and one thing that I've always loved about October, my birthday. Kamala Harris's birthday is coming up on October 20th, but mine was earlier in the month. I noticed you didn't get me a present. You didn't get me anything.
I'm so sorry.
I know what happened.
Two favorite Libras.
I think I know what happened. You were trying to decide between the $100,000 Trump gold watch, the $300 Trump gold sneakers, the NFTs that I'm certain he has absolutely no idea what that is, or maybe you were thinking about getting me one of the Trump Bibles. I don't know which one you're thinking, and I can see how you were torn by that decision.
I was scared. You know, you seem like a real Bible guy on first impression, but then when I really think about it, I'm like, what about the watch? And then I've also seen like the gold throne that he has. So
it was a tough call. You froze.
It's tough, very tough. But I think you might be getting a gold Bible sometime in the mail.
Awesome. Well, Kamala's birthday is coming up on October 20th. And I just want to ask every single listener to get Kamala the gift she really needs, an hour of your time phone banking into the swing states. You can go to ctdems.org/swingstates, and there's all kinds of opportunities for you to do that.
Also, if you are a younger Democrat, we say under the age of 35, or you're a Democrat who's in college, or you're in high school, we're going to be holding a virtual rally Tuesday, October 22nd from 7 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. We're still planning the event, but if you would like to register, please take a look at either our Instagram, CollegeDemCT, or the Young Dems Instagram.
Awesome. So as we're recording this, Hurricane Milton is about to bear down on Florida. By the time people listen to this, they'll have some video and some understanding of just how bad this thing is. But this is certainly the top story in the news. With good reason, and as people have tried to make to evacuate, some people ultimately cannot evacuate. This thing is going to be an absolute mess, and it comes on the heels of Helene. This is a hurricane season that reminds me of 2005 when Katrina, Rita, and Wilma all hit in the southeast. Horrible stuff coming out of the Trump and Vance campaign as they misrepresent FEMA to people in North Carolina, people in Georgia, and now people in Florida.
It's really disheartening to hear that in a time of this much hardship, when people should be having the utmost amount of trust in their government, someone is coming in and telling them and really providing disinformation, saying that they're spending these FEMA checks on immigrants, when that has been proven over and over again that's entirely false. It's impossible to have done that in the first place. And the real issue here is not giving proper funding through Congress in order to be able to help people with these disaster relief situations. And guess who voted against providing that funding?
You mean by party or an individual?
By party.
I can guess. I can guess by party because it happens over and over and over again. Now, in the wake of Katrina in 2005, there definitely were some problems on execution from FEMA. FEMA did not have a great response to that storm. But I will say since then, that was 19 years ago. In the 19 years since, FEMA certainly has done a much better job. And if you listen to governors, and of the affected states in Helene, most of them are Republican, all but North Carolina are Republican governors. They have nothing but praise for what FEMA did. And I'm grateful that at least they are out there saying, no, this is the facts. These are the facts. But how is it that facts seem to get in the way of J.D. Vance and Donald Trump's arguments?
It's incredible to me. I'm not sure if you also saw, but Donald Trump also rejected doing an interview on 60 Minutes recently because he was going to be fact-checked. And I just want everyone to think logically here. If someone is so scared of being fact-checked that they refuse to do an interview, what does that mean about what's coming out of their mouth?
A little later on, we're going to talk about the vice presidential debate, but let's just have this little tidbit. Everybody's single favorite line from the vice presidential debate from J.D. Vance.
The rules were that you guys weren't going to fact check.
So that's become a theme. No fact checking is what they're looking for on the Trump-Vance team. Meanwhile, Kamala Harris did a bit of a media blitz this week, talking to Late Show Stephen Colbert. She went on The View. She talked to Howard Stern's, 10 million listeners in his audience. and so on, trying to push back on some of these lies.
Yeah, she's been doing really incredible work. I've also seen that she has been doing a lot of work to try to support people in Florida after these natural disasters. There's so much work to be done in order to clean up after these big things. So if you can pitch in and help or donate anything, it's incredibly important to get people back on their feet.
Yeah, one thing that always gets me is the animal rescues, because boy, as bad as this is for people, some people have to leave their pets or even livestock. You know, there were some images of people who owned horses trying to deal with that. Can you imagine?
Right. And just to set the record straight on FEMA, they have provided, as of Sunday, $137 million in assistance to six states in the Southeast, including 7,000 federal personnel, nearly 15 million meals, 14 million liters of water, and 157 generators, and more than 500,000 tarps. That doesn't really sound like just a $750 check to me personally.
Right. They jump on a fact, which is that the initial payment to get immediate needs taken care of, buy yourself some new groceries, you know, maybe the first night in a hotel, et cetera, to get those immediate needs taken care of, is a $750 check. But that is not the end of FEMA's engagement with disaster-torn communities. That is just the beginning.
And the important thing is that I think these are long-term issues, and therefore they are assistance is provided sort of long-term. It's not all provided immediately. So it's important to keep that in mind, just to not get caught up in the immediate numbers of what's going out to individual people.
Back here in Connecticut, we had some flooding in August, and the FEMA disaster recovery centers are now open in both Southbury and there's one in Wilton. So for people who experience some flooding and need to apply in person for federal aid, you can do that. There's a lot of information on the governor's website and on Representative Johanna Hayes' website. She was, of course, instrumental in getting that aid approved by President Biden and delivered to Connecticut. That leads to the funding issue, right? Eventually, in years where there's a lot of disasters, FEMA's budget runs out and it needs to be supplemented. You know, it should be a no-brainer. And I do remember in the wake of Sandy and Irene, I think it was, around 2012, FEMA ran out of funding. And there was a whole big argument in the House and Senate about getting that funding done. And what tends to happen is Republicans want to tie it to something else that they know they couldn't otherwise pass. I haven't heard anything about that in this cycle yet. Mike Johnson has not been terribly forthcoming on what his plans are. He just sort of says FEMA has enough money, therefore, we don't need to convene a special session. After Milton blows through Florida, I don't know if that's going to be true anymore.
I'm really hoping that these natural disasters and the frequency of them and the level of intensity of them will maybe bring some attention and realness to climate change and how that's happening. We haven't seen natural disasters at this level back to back to back in this way. And I hope that people are really able to kind of connect these dots and make some tangible change in that department as well, especially because I think that states like Florida are the most affected by these kinds of issues, but there's also the most amount of, I feel, resistance in terms of actually addressing these issues. So as painful and horrible as it is, I hope that in some ways it might be a little bit eye-opening.
Yeah, someone mapped the congressional districts in Florida, the path of this upcoming hurricane, and who voted for and against FEMA funding. And, you know, shockingly, the ones who were most in the direct path were the Republican members who voted against it. It's tragic, really. You know, in the insurance business, they talk about frequency and severity of events. You can think about there are certain things that happen all the time, but they're not terribly severe. There are other things that don't happen very often, but man, the severity is off the charts. And what we're seeing is both frequency and severity rising on natural disasters, not just hurricanes, but wildfires are another thing that are caused by drought out west that are just absolutely devastating. And this fight will be coming to Congress. You know, climate change is one of those things on your ballot. And this year we're about to go to the polls. Connecticut, you get to go to the polls a little bit early this year if you want. In-person voting starts on Monday, October 21st, runs 14 days in a row. We're going to get all the details on that and a lot more from Secretary of State Stephanie Thomas. Our guest, Tara, sat down with her and they had a wide-ranging discussion about all the details around early voting, around civic engagement, and some of the other things that Secretary Thomas has been doing since she was elected in 2022.
This week on Connecticrats, we are joined with Secretary Thomas, the 75th Secretary of State of Connecticut, serving since January of 2023. Secretary Thomas previously represented the 143rd District in the Connecticut House of Representatives. With a background in nonprofit management, Thomas has led significant election reforms, including early voting and voting machine upgrades. She also serves on the National Association of Secretaries of State's executive board focusing on election security and civic engagement. Welcome to the podcast, Secretary Thomas.
Thank you. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me this time of year in particular.
We're very excited to have you here. Let's jump right into the critical issues of election reform and voting systems, which is very pertinent given the upcoming election on the horizon. Since you led the implementation of early voting within the state of Connecticut, what do you kind of see as the biggest advantages and challenges with this reform?
Sure. The biggest advantages is that it helps anyone who wants to vote in person, safely and securely as always, additional days that they can do that. When I was still in the House, the bill was being discussed initially, or the reform, and many people of every stripe came to testify. People like me, who are commuters into another state, who sometimes didn't know their schedule or train reliability, parents of young children who talked about having to miss an election once because a child was too sick to bundle up and get out, and they couldn't find a sitter. The AARP was a huge proponent of this bill because a lot of people on medication don't know their good days from their bad days in advance. And the list goes on and on. Literally, it's a reform for every single person. People with unreliable transportation, people with scheduled surgery, so many things. The biggest challenge is, of course, with anything new, is getting the word out. And that's why I'm really happy to do things like this, to try to educate voters about, one, early voting exists, but also to get them the details about how to do it, when to do it, and how it works.
So let's get into exactly that. So how do you early vote? When do we do it? And how do you make sure that you're doing everything right and your vote gets counted?
Okay. So early voting for this election runs from Monday, October 21st through Sunday, November 3rd. So if you're not looking at a calendar right now, that includes two Saturdays and two Sundays, which is amazing in and of itself. Imagine being able to go vote on a Saturday or a Sunday. I think that's amazing. The hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. all of those days, except October 29th and October 31st, when the hours are 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. And remind me of the other questions.
I think you pretty much covered it. Also, I wanted to kind of have you explain what the new centralized voter registration system will be like and how that will improve voting experience for residents.
Oh, sure. And before I leave early voting in its entirety, I tell people to go to our myvote.ct.gov website. That's our election website, and that's where you can find all information, where your early voting location is. Because a lot of people are getting confused that it's the same as their election day location, and that is not the case. So you want to look up your location. I told you the hours. And one town in Connecticut, Mansfield, has two locations. One of those locations is on the UConn campus at their bookstore, which I think is amazing for all of those students. We also have a voter guide out, which gives you all of this information. And you can find that also at myvote.ct.gov. Now, the centralized voter registration system, we call it CVRS. Long ago, before Y2K, registrars, election workers, across the country, really, we're still using sort of analog systems like index cards and basic spreadsheets, etc. And the federal government required states to put together statewide systems. And We started our CVRS in the early 2000s. So we were one of the first states in the country to do so. And that system, like all systems that are 20 years old, over 20 years old, has gotten a little antiquated. It can't do all the newest bells and whistles. The company that originally made it no longer exists. So we've been building a new one, and it is actually very close to completion. We'll be rolling it out next year.
Securing $25 million for upgrading the state's voting machines was an incredibly historical achievement that you played a big hand in. How will this investment impact the efficiency and security of Connecticut's elections sort of moving forward?
Sure. It's amazing. And I'm so grateful to the governor and the bonding committee and the bonding commission for releasing those fundings. So $20 million of that bonding request will go toward election infrastructure. So that means we get new tabulators. Those are the machines that most people are used to feeding their ballot through on election day. But we also have a really exciting change, which is we are getting some medium and high speed counters. What a lot of voters don't realize right now, all absentee ballots, once they're opened on election day, are fed one by one through a tabulator for the count. For a town that gets 1,000, it's not so bad. But for a town that gets 20,000, it takes a lot of time. So these high speed and medium speed counters can count like 100 ballots or up to 200 ballots a minute. So I'm really excited about that. 9 towns are doing a pilot this year, and the rest will be rolled out for the next election in 2025.
That's really, really incredible to hear and very much needed. I was wondering how you envision automatic voter registration, maybe first, what is it, but also at various like state agencies, improving voter participation rates in Connecticut?
Sure. AVR, automatic voter registration, right now exists at the DMV. So a lot of people are used to that. You know, when you go to renew your license or get a license or change something else at the DMV, there's like a pop-up or some communication about, are you registered to vote? You can opt out always. And it allows you to register right there. So the legislature passed a bill a couple of years ago that allows other state agencies to do the same. The key requirement is that the state agency has to already have information that they collect that prove that that person is an eligible voter, so a citizen and over the age of 18. So I'm excited. We've been speaking with many of the agencies about changing their computer systems, linking them like the DMV had to do with these centralized voter registration systems. So I look forward in Connecticut in the years to come for more agencies to come online.
Now sort of moving towards your great achievements in civic engagement, your Connect and Cut series aims to meet people at their own spaces, such as barbershops and salons. What kind of impact have you seen from these initiatives in terms of increasing civic engagement?
Sure. We have spent a lot of time going to communities, every community, and talking to people person to person. I go myself, usually members of my team, also volunteers from barbershops to fairs and festivals to neighborhood meetings and more. And it's hard to measure the impact, but I will say what I've heard again and again from many people is statements like, wow, I've never seen someone from government come into my neighborhood and like speak with us, or wow, I've seen you more than once and it's not election time. I think people are just hungry for knowledge, and I'm most gratified when I give every audience a civics quiz and I ask a couple of questions, and I'm always gratified when I see the look like, no one, like most people don't get the questions right. And I say, don't feel bad. Like no one's ever taught you this. And they realize, hey, no one has taught us this. And they get excited when they realize that there is a role for we the people in government, and that it's just that they don't know how to engage, and they're really happy to learn how. So I'm most excited about that.
So I've had a little bit of fun playing around with the website civics101.ct.gov, which is a Civics 101 resource in order to kind of educate people that you've created. What kind of motivated you to create this resource, and how have you seen it be received by the public?
I think my first day here, I was looking for something on our website, and for good reason, much of our website is written by attorneys because election law is very specific, very detailed, etc. And I caught myself reading something like four times, like, what are they trying to say? And I thought, if I'm having this problem, I guarantee you other people are having this problem. So we decided to put up the Civics 101 site, and I describe it as plain language resources for all the things people ask us about the most. How does early voting work? How do you vote when you're a college student? What if I was formerly incarcerated? What if I have a disability and need extra help at the polls? And what else can I do besides voting? So all of these types of resources are available on Civics 101. And I also thought it was important to make sure that people could share the information easily. So most of it is in the form of nicely designed flyers or brochures that people can just download and share with their neighborhood group, friends, family, etc. So I've gotten really good feedback. I don't have stats in front of me on like the number of downloads, but my happiest moment is when I go to a community event and I see someone has already printed out our resources and has them on like the welcome table. That's when I know my work is having an impact.
I certainly really enjoyed taking a look at the website. It's super well designed and very easy to follow.
Great. Okay.
With that, I want to say thank you so much for joining us today, Secretary Thomas. Your insights into election reform, early voting, and civic engagement have been incredibly valuable, especially as we approach this upcoming election.
Yes. Don't forget, early voting in person, safe and secure. And thank you for having me. And go out and vote, everyone.
Yes. Go vote.
Since the last episode of Kineticrats, a CT Dems podcast, we had the final debate. Well, what is likely the final debate at the presidential level with the VP candidates, J.D. Vance and Tim Walz. October 1st, they met in New York City, I think it was, and held their first debate. You know, a lot's been said about it. Saturday Night Live has done its parodies. What did you think?
My favorite part of the debate was that even J.D. Vance couldn't help but love Tim Walz, I feel like, on that stage. There were so many moments where I was like, really? You're going to be that nice to him? And I was like, okay, I understand it, because he's just that lovable of a guy. You just can't help it.
Yeah, and J.D.'s negative numbers are so bad. I think he went into it coached properly that, like, if nothing else, you have to come out of this seeming like a nice guy. And so he was complimentary, and they were complimentary to each other. And like I said, Saturday Night Live parodying that kind of made fun of that too with their sketch on the debate. I don't know, in terms of substantive stuff.
I think that Tim Walz kind of had a little bit of a shaky start, but he really hit his stride when he started talking about abortion and the Capitol riot. I think that he really eloquently put together a description of what happened on January 6th and nailed the points there home.
Yeah, January 6th is a sort of disqualifying event in my mind and in minds of a lot of people on our side of the aisle, but not for people like J.D. Vance or George Logan, for that matter, who still intends to vote for Trump. It is amazing to me that someone like J.D. Vance can't break a little tiny bit from President Trump's false narrative and try to put a spin on it that's at least recognizes the severity and the threat that was, and how awful that event was. And even if you can spin it by pinning the blame on the participants, you know, that would be one way to go. That's not the way he wants to go.
My favorite moment was when Walls shot back that was a damning non-answer. That was such a great moment, I think. I also thought it was really interesting how the Trump campaign has all of a sudden decided to soften their rhetoric on abortion. I felt like the J.D. Vance sort of sob story about his friend that he had a issue with regarding to abortion and stuff just came across really ingenuous to me, because you're sharing these stories and you're saying that you have empathy for these people, and then you're turning around and being a part of a campaign that has stripped back these rights for millions of American women. It was really, really disheartening to see that, and I feel like it's misleading people to believe that there is a more softer rhetoric on that side, when in reality that's not at all part of their policy agenda.
That whole episode read to me like the, oh yeah, my girlfriend goes to another high school, you wouldn't know her. Like it appeared to be invented out of thin air, and I don't know that any reporting, it's inappropriate for any reporting to try to find this person if they want their privacy. So therefore it's sort of a perfect scenario for him to lay out to attempt to soften the image, but there's absolutely no softening in that. And polling shows that. Polling shows that where abortion rights are a primary driver of someone's vote, I mean, overwhelmingly, the Harris ticket that's going to win on that issue. So in terms of overall polling, you know, this debate absolutely didn't move the needle. And I'm not sure vice presidential debate ever has, right? In my lifetime, the only two memorable moments from VP debates. One was the fly landing on Mike Pence's head, which had nothing to do with anything, but was kind of comical. And then the other is from a long time ago when a guy named Lloyd Bentsen was running for vice president, and he sort of shot down Dan Quayle with the line about, you know, you're no Jack Kennedy. It's a line that's been parodied a number of times. It's sort of like it was prepared, it was ready. And when he was ready to deploy it, it was just like a dagger. It was wonderful. But that's it. Like, these things don't really move the needle. And we've seen the exact same tight race the whole time. I mean, it's just not moving. I check these poll aggregation websites, including Born to Run the Numbers from our past guest on this show. I check them all the time, and the numbers just don't move. It's so disheartening.
Trust me, I'm refreshing the page right there with you. But I do think the good thing about this debate is that Tim Walz, I believe he's the most he's polling the best on anyone else on this ticket so far, and he definitely didn't lose his stride with that. So I think preserving that popularity was really important, and the support that he provides Kamala. But yeah, I mean, VP debates I think are more for us political nerds to kind of look into and analyze than it is for the broader electorate to make their large voting decisions on.
A term that I've heard a bunch of times is that this race is within the margin of effort. I'm going to attribute that to the chair of the Wisconsin Dems, but I'm not sure if he coined that term or not. I've heard it repeated by folks in Michigan. Again, not the margin of error, the margin of effort. Who wants it more? Who tries harder? And I do remember after 2016, a lot of people looked themselves in the mirror and thought, what else could I have done? Well, don't have that feeling come November 6th. We've got buses going to Pennsylvania here from Connecticut. The first couple will be going out this weekend. But in addition, on October 19th, so next Saturday, there are buses that are leaving from West Haven and running along the South Coast, and then one leaving from Windsor and kind of going from the Hartford area out to eastern Pennsylvania, so we can do some canvassing to support not only Kamala Harris, but also some swing district members of Congress who we hope to get reelected as well, because retaking the House is critically important. So if you're interested in that, tell you what, just throw me an email, info@ctdems.org, and I'll get you all the information that you possibly could need about that canvassing trip and how to sign up and where the departure points are and all that stuff. And in addition, there are going to be lots more going that you'll be able to find on mobilize.us. That is, again, mobilize.us, to find all kinds of information on how you can help Kamala Harris in the swing states. Again, can't believe it's October already. And here we are. Election day is coming up fast. But more importantly, early voting day is coming up even faster. Again, that starts on October 21st. The full list of voting locations will be published at the Secretary of State's website and, of course, at ctdems.org. You can check that out. In coming episodes of this show, we'll do some predictions around the state. You know, are there races that you've been looking at, races that you've been curious about, races that you've been paying particularly close attention to?
I've been looking a lot at the Johanna Hayes race.
Of course.
Ever since I interviewed Nick Simmons, I've been also taking a look at his race as well. I've become a little bit of a fan. And then also College Dems and endorsement of Rob Blanchard. So I'm always taking a look at his race and seeing what's up with that as well.
Both Johanna Hayes and Nick Simmons had debates in the last day or two. We'll go back and look at some of those videos as well. And we'll have some more content for you next week on next episode of Kineticrats, the CT Dems podcast.
Bye-bye.